This is the December 14 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Naomi Bloom. She's at TotalGrainMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Aaron Curtis joins us from Midco in Bloomington, Illinois. And Mike Zuzulo is here from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, and you can get yourself registered for one of the Illinois Farm Economics Summits that are coming up in the month of January. The agricultural economist, the Farm Doc team from the University of Illinois, and myself will go on the road on the 9th, the 10th, and the 11th. We'll be in Mount Vernon, followed by East Peoria, and then DeKalb. But you need to register. Don't wait. Do it right now today. You can do that at willag.org. Look for IFAS, or you can find it at the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Let's get a list of items that we should discuss for the day. I think, Mike Zuzulo, I'll start with you. I'll bet that the Federal Reserve is on your list. What else?
You'd win that bet, Todd. I'd say the headwinds dissipating, two of the three biggest ones in 2023, maybe wanted to broach and see if maybe we can get the agricultural futures to give us a potential Santa Claus rally now that we do have a couple things looking like tailwinds instead of headwinds.
Oh, I can hardly wait to see if that Santa Claus rally for 2023 or 2024. We'll find out as we make our way through the program.
That's right. I didn't say 2023. I'm glad you made that qualification.
Naomi Bloom from TotalGrainMarketing.com. What's on your list to discuss today?
Well, of course, keeping an eye on outside market influences, as you mentioned, the Fed and the value of the dollar, how that's been working lower, wanting to keep an eye on Brazil and weather, and maybe we get some news out of the Biden administration regarding corn ethanol use for the aviation industry. So there are some announcements that may be coming out.
And Aaron Curtis from Midco.
Yeah, what we're trying to figure out, right, is when the big long in the market, and that's the farmer, decides to change his ways. It's been pretty quiet here, but this is the quietest December that the producer has had in terms of selling old crop grain since 2019. So just wondering what changes that. Is it a price? Is it a time? Is it a combination of both? But trying to read the crystal ball and try to see when the farmer gets a little more engaged here in this corn market, because it is awful quiet.
You know, I have not read the article that Nick Paulson and company read about how much farmer movement there has been, though I know it's made some impact on our air for the week. I don't know whether that's where you picked this up from, Aaron, or not, or if it's just that farmers have not moved the grain in December, which apparently is one of the largest grain moving times for corn annually, and whether it's just apparent to you at your elevator there and throughout the system, or if it's much broader than that.
Yeah, it seems to be a pretty common thing. You know, we look at our kind of our hedge volume across the Midwest, and it's pretty light everywhere, and, you know, our elevators that we visit with, right, continue to comment on how quiet it is, and the farmer is very disengaged and not really even putting in offers at this point. Movement has been okay, but it's all mostly contracted stuff, not a lot of spot stuff. You know, obviously the weather is cooperative. I think a producer wants to start moving some stuff off the farm at this point to take advantage of this nice weather, but, you know, doesn't like the price here at this point. So, you know, when does that change is kind of what we're trying to figure out. January is the same way. It's typically a heavy movement month for the producer. If you look at the marketing percentages, it's always one of the lead months in terms of percentage price. But boy, not much on the books right now that the farmer has for January. So does that change once we get into a new tax year or not? But it seems like if we continue to be in this broad range that's really going nowhere on corn, it looks like it's going to be a slow movement from the farmer this winter. And, you know, does that eventually kind of work its way into basis here? That's kind of the interesting piece that we'll see if that materializes here over the next few weeks.
Mike Zuzulo, when you talk to clientele, are they reluctant to move grain at this time?
Yeah, they are. And I think, Todd, two things that we didn't, we don't usually have to contend with this time period during the harvest and immediately after post-harvest was the higher moisture levels, especially in the central and eastern Corn Belt, coupled with the Mississippi River levels. I think these things, along with good yields and better than expected yields, in many cases, really hit the basis hard. And I think that, in my opinion, froze a lot of producers from doing much, especially in the corn market. Now, I did talk to a client near Tuscola in Douglas County today, and he said that ground piles of soybeans are being reduced very, very quickly at this point. And so I think there is the commercial movement that I think could come together with the delay of the farmer selling that maybe would give us a little bit more of a pop in the basis as we get into the first of the year. And I think what Aaron's talking about, it seems to me to be very, very key from a standpoint that they should, I think, take advantage of at least getting basis contracts locked in if you haven't seen much of a futures rally, generally speaking.
And Naomi Bloom, I would like your assessment of the situation on the ground and what logistics look like as it relates to the movement, just the movement itself and whether it's is or is not happening at a pace that will meet needs.
I'm almost wondering if the weather has been too good from the standpoint of farmers. I was just in South Dakota the last couple of weeks in northwest Iowa, and they are doing a huge amount of fall field work, working on trimming trees and ditch work, as a tiling going on. So I'm wondering if they're more distracted by being able to have more opportunity to get things done on the farm than wanting to move grain, especially when the prices, of course, have been ho-hum. So we'll see if the new year can bring us anything in terms of better prices. One thing to add is that 16 out of the last 16 years, price of March corn futures do rally into January after the December WASDE report. The average rally has been 47 cents. Might be a little harder to get that kind of a rally this year with 2 billion bushel carryout, but I think that there's going to be some incentive here along the way, and producers, one gentleman's point, the new tax year might bring some opportunities for folks as well as far as getting some more sales on the books.
You know, Mike Zuzulo, that brings us to Santa Claus. Can he deliver by Christmas?
I did a meme of Chairman Powell. I put a Santa Claus suit on him for the clients and subscribers yesterday afternoon because the hawk has landed at this point. So the two biggest things other than Russia and Ukraine in all of 2023 for me has been the Federal Reserve pounding the interest rates higher, pounding the dollar higher, pounding the emerging markets lower through the bond yields, and then also the U.S.-China trade relationship. And it seemed like the ice broke at the NAFB conference when the U.S. and China met about 3 weeks ago or so in San Francisco. And the weekly export sales today with a marketing year high in wheat, which I still think is our leader, China being the number one buyer, the export sales 4 times higher than last week. This coupled with what the Federal Reserve did and what he said at his press conference would make me think you've got two significant headwinds from 2023 really out of your hair at this point from a commodity investment standpoint and also from trying to make a demand low in the grain specifically. And so, yes, we have Argentina to work around because of the movement that they have done with their currency markets and their devaluation, but it sure feels a lot better right now from a pressure standpoint as far as what you have in front of you and facing you to knock you back from having a rally potential than what I felt maybe 1 month or 6 months ago.
Let me stay with you for just a moment, Mike. I believe, and I haven't read through this completely, but that what was said was we're done raising rates and there's likely to be three. Not one, not two, but three decreases in the coming year. Is that right?
Yeah, and that was the big news. I mean, everybody was going to watch the dot plot and watch what the future PCE number was, the way they measure inflation. And you're right. I mean, they're going to go back down to about a 4.6% Fed funds rate in 2024 as it stands right now. And I do think that was market moving news. I'm hopeful that the stock market is actually giving us a little bit of an idea of how much of a risk on rally commodity funds may want to try and step into as we get out of 2023 and into 2024. I really did feel like that the December crop expiration today, along with the Argentine news, maybe kept us subdued. But I'd be disappointed if we didn't have a good close in the month of December.
Wait, what was the Argentine news?
Well, their devaluation and them coming out and saying, okay, we've got the export taxes lined out. It's going to be 15% on corn and wheat versus 12%. We're going to keep soybean export taxes at 33%. And one of the biggest farm groups came out after that announcement and said, we do not like this at all.
Yeah, and that was the expectation there, of course, is that that is temporary, but who knows what temporary is, and then that those would come off and the marketplace would be freer and Argentina would enter the marketplace. Naomi Bloom, I want to, and Mike, you can come back to that if you want, but Naomi, I want to turn to you as it's related to what happened in Washington, D.C. with the Federal Reserve this year or this week, and from your perspective, what that means for the marketplace?
Two things. I think that the fact that the Fed had the language of lowering interest rates in 2024, you know, that part of the mentality is allowing the U.S. dollar to work a little bit lower. So if we can continue to see that drop, as you know, that'll be great for our agricultural exports in terms of currency exchange rate, makes us a little bit more competitive down the road. I'm also thinking that, you know, with the Fed announcement, maybe the funds, because they had been not really partaking in commodity trading like they had in years past, because with higher interest rates, they could go make money elsewhere easier and not have to deal with the daily drama of commodity markets. So now that the interest rates are potentially going to be going lower, with the dollar going down, maybe we finally get some kind of a story starting to build in agricultural again and in the commodities, and maybe they start to exit short positions and come back in as buyers. So that is something else for 2024 to keep an eye on.
Aaron Curtis, it is always about whether there's buyers, but at what level they actually enter the marketplace from here, whether that's higher or lower. If you had to guess going into the year, what do things look like?
I'm going to predict more of the same. I just don't think there's enough interest in the corn market anyway to get things out of this recent range. I know the lower dollar does help, but we've got to get something going on the export side, and there's just nothing going right now. If you just it's mostly routine business. Mexico obviously continues to be a large buyer of corn with some of their weather concerns they've had in the southern regions of Mexico. So that's been a good customer. But, you know, China's the glaring one there. And just their interest level here compared to the last two or three years just hasn't been there on the corn side. So routine business on corn exports. And we continue to see CIF values just really non-existent. There's just plenty of competition right across the global landscape here right now to continue to keep the interest level on U.S. corn pretty much non-existent. So I think without that, right, I mean, we could see some fun short covering, but we need to see a better appetite for the export side in order to really talk about building any sort of a base in the corn market here moving forward. And I think, you know, historically, when the farmer is as long as he is, the market continues to usually struggles to rally, and that's just kind of always overhanging the market. And I think that continued to limit the upside in that $4.90 to $5 level on March corn.
Frayne Olson earlier in the week from North Dakota State University Extension was explaining to me that he is concerned that the pace of exports, should they pick up, not the number or the demand, but just the pace of the rate at which exports are moving out of the United States, might cause the basis to break because of the flow levels on the Mississippi, I suppose the Ohio River, the southern part of the river, because we're getting into the winter time frame. Do you think that might be the case, Aaron? You watch the basis awfully closely.
Yeah, so really we've seen barge freight pretty stagnant. You know, Illinois is trading in that 380 to 390% area. It's been pretty flat here recently. We have seen an uptick in water levels with some of that rain. So we did see drafts, which is what's being able to load it on a boat, tick up here a little bit in St. Louis and south. But the Memphis gauge is expected to crest here Sunday, Monday, and I think we're going to quickly see water levels deteriorate in the lower half of the Mississippi. In the second part of December here towards the end of the month. So I think that's going to be a concern. I think we're going to see drafts continue to work backwards here as we move into the latter half of the year. Because if you look at the extended forecast in the Midwest, it looks fairly dry, and that's pretty consistent with El Nino. So I think the concern would be, you know, if we do see an increase in export demand, a lower river combination, that would perk up barge freight. And typically that's a detriment to river basis. So that would be something to watch here as we continue to move through the first part of 2024, what those water levels along the Mississippi do. If they continue to work lower, that's probably going to be a longer term detriment to basis.
Naomi Bloom, I assume that the things that are on your list to watch in the old crop particularly are second crop or Safrinha corn in Brazil, the Argentine and Brazilian soybean crops in total, and then total supply across the planet of corn, soybeans, and wheat. There is a 35% in the United States stocks to use ratio. That's enormous. How do you put it all together and think about January, February, and March?
Well, what's interesting is like, okay, let's take it commodity by commodity. So here in the U.S., corn total ending stocks are over 2 billion bushels. When you look at global ending stocks for corn, they are actually teeter-tottering back and forth, hingent on what's going to happen in South America. So we've been kind of going back and forth between 315 million metric tons for carryout, maybe as much down to closer to 300. And so for the past 4 years, it's back and forth teeter-totter. So to your point, watching the weather in Brazil and Argentina is paramount. We know that Argentina doesn't have a crop to export until late March, April, when they're done harvesting, but we know that their crop has recovered because they've had better weather. What is in question is the Brazil crop. So we know that the Brazil soybean crop was slow to get planted, so it's going to be slower to get harvested. That means the second crop, corn, that Safrinha crop, 70% of their total production of corn is going to be planted late and then growing in their dry season. So what we're really unsure of, and you hear so many different things on social media in terms of what that Brazil bean crop is or isn't, or what the Safrinha second crop corn will or will not be, and the global balance sheet very, very much hinges on the weather there and what the total production is. So if they end up having a wonderful crop, then we have every reason to see corn and bean prices slide lower towards the end of 2024. But if the crop truly is in question, we then see every reason to have regular seasonal patterns for prices here. We could see a competition for acres yet in this country with our renewable energy demand picking up and for our soybeans and our U.S. ending stocks for beans being tight, but the global ending stocks for soybeans being on the larger side. So again, to your point, it comes all back down to Brazil, weather watching, and the next probably 6 weeks, we're either going to have potential nice price rally depending on what's happening in South America, or things kind of peter out and prices limp a little lower.
I've seen, Mike Zuzla, at least two supply and demand tables, one of them from the USDA, one of them from the University of Illinois, that show carry out this year, of course, above 2 billion, but 2.6 for corn by the time we get to the fall of 25, so the 24th season that's coming, and soybeans above 300. What do your supply and demand tables show?
Yeah, I'm not there yet, Todd. I think it really goes back to the fact of the matter right now is, and every year is different, but China has met their TRQ on wheat imports by going over 10 million. This is USDA saying this last week. It's the first calendar year that they'll import over 10 million tons since 1995. That speaks volumes to me about the demand side of the equation and how that's been such a negative feature of this market the last year and a half. It's all been about weather and supply. That all goes back to the Fed and all goes back to the U.S. and China. To Naomi's point, at a 26.1 stocks to use ratio globally for corn in CONAB already, 10 million, almost 11 million tons lower than USDA right now. If we trim the ending stocks of corn by 10 million tons and didn't change demand, we'd fall below 26%. We'd fall below last year's stocks to use ratios. We'd actually be at an 8 to 9 year low in stocks to use ratio in corn, just like we're at an 8 to 9 year low in stocks to use ratios for wheat globally. And so I think to Aaron's point as well, because I always like to, I want to try and make this good for the listeners, as good as possible for the listener. I would be on Aaron's side very quickly if USDA did not move abruptly in January, because I think they're caught on their heels right now and they need to make some reductions in January, especially if this weather pattern doesn't break. And we thought it's going to rain for the second week in center west Brazil for now 3 weeks in a row, and these actual rainfall totals just keep disappointing.
You agree with all of that, Aaron?
Yeah, I do. I think these next 2 to 3 weeks in Brazil is probably pretty key to the bean market. It's probably worth 80 cents either up or down. If we don't get these rains start to materialize from this 21st on, which the extended forecast continue to kind of promise, I think we have an opportunity for some rally in beans. I think one of the things we got to keep in mind, right, is Argentina bean crop up 23 million metric tons from a year ago, and Argentina corn up 21 million metric tons from a year ago, and looks pretty decent in Argentina right now. So, we could slip down into a 150, 155 million metric ton bean crop in Brazil and still be pretty comfortable on the worldwide stock side. So I think that's just something we got to continue to keep in mind, that Argentina's recovery from last year's drought is going to go a long ways for seeing any sort of drop in Brazil moving forward. But we definitely need something to happen on the corn export side here for the U.S., and hopefully that's coming. We do have a window. If you start to look at some of the FOB values comparatively to our global competition, we have that window opening up after the first of the year, and we got to take full advantage of it. And we have any sort of delay in the second corn crop planting because more beans in Brazil are being planted full season, then maybe that opens that up window up even more. But we need to take advantage here in the first quarter of 2024 to get something going on the corn export side.
Are you seeing the crop insurance setting month, end of January and February, the time frame then or earlier than that?
It would be last half Jan through first part of March, I think, is when that open window. We're already, seeing Brazil exportable supplies. You've probably seen what Brazil corn futures have done here over the last couple weeks, anticipating some of that concern with the second corn crop. Brazil corn economics were pretty poor, right, this fall, so crop was going to be down no matter what, and then he's throwing any sort of weather delays or concerns, it complicates the issue a little bit and opens that window for the U.S. Even more. But on a comparative basis, it's that first quarter of 2024, and that's been the case the last couple years, where we need to see that window between Brazil and Argentina's crop to try to take advantage, and that's the hope again this year, because otherwise the USDA has some work to do on downgrading exports here after they've raised exports the last 2 months in a row.
You've been tracking consumption, I'm sure, Naomi Bloom, domestically, ethanol and feed usage for corn and then the crush for soybeans. How are those all holding up?
Well, I feel like they are not disappointing by any means. There's always a little bit room for improvement, but I think that we're mostly on track with what the USDA is projecting. We have a NOPA crush report tomorrow at 11. That'll give us a little bit more insight in terms of more of our domestic demand here at home. So tomorrow's report expected to show 186 million bushels crushed for November. The range is anywhere between like 183, 190, and we're going to keep an eye on that. With the export market, it is definitely touch and go. If there's truly a hint or a real glimmer of doubt with production in Brazil in terms of the beans and the corn, I think you're going to see our exports pick up pretty quick and people come to the United States. Again, with that Brazil corn, 70% of that Safrina crop, that's 70% of their production, and that's usually what saves the day for the world come August, September. That's what gets exported out to the world, and if that's not available or it's deemed that it's going to be smaller, then our corn right now is pretty cheap value, with the value of the dollar working lower, it makes it definitely more attractive for other countries too. So there's multiple reasons really putting together here why grain prices could see a little bit of a pop higher in the coming weeks. And domestic demand, definitely something to watch. We'll see tomorrow if the Biden administration has any fresh news for us in terms of corn ethanol use for the aviation market. We don't have any handle on what that potential could be. So maybe tomorrow we get a little bit of a glimmer of news from that. That would be a nice little holiday present for the farmers out there. And, you know, heading into an election year might be a nice way for this administration to try to secure some more Midwest votes.
Again, just as a reminder, tomorrow is Friday, as we are recording on Thursday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo, Naomi started our conversation by discussing some of the things she had seen in the last couple of weeks in the Dakotas and parts of western Iowa. There is concern, a lot of concern among those producers, and I think among some meteorologists as well, that subsoil moisture levels there, topsoil is also extraordinarily short at this point. If things don't change, what does that mean to that part of the world?
Yeah, this is, I think, where the futures market and the cash market may need to diverge. And I would put it probably in the month of February when we get ready to get that base price set for crop insurance, Todd, because I think you and Naomi bring up a huge point, because Iowa would be included in some of these SMAP maps that really have some disturbing features to them and trends. And it goes all the way to central Indiana. I was talking to a client near Romney, Indiana, and they were talking about how dry they were as well. And so it's a wide-ranging part of the central part of the United States. And if Brazil doesn't improve, I think the trade and the funds will start to maybe put two and two together and say, well, if we're tighter on supplies in South America, we're going to have to worry more about the United States getting planted. And I would see that maybe coming to more into focus by the funds in the February time period, and then address it more seriously heading into the March acreage report. So it's definitely on my radar. There's several things we got to work through first, but it's all part of the dynamic of how the funds think and the momentum behind the funds, and weather has become a very substantial reason for funds to jump into the market and jump right back out very quickly.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. Aaron Curtis from Midco in Bloomington, Illinois. We'll start with you for the day.
I think the market continues to be fairly range-bound on the grains, and that's on the corn side. So continue to see support around that 450 area in March corn. Resistance continues to be pretty stiff in that 495 to $5 area. I think sometime this winter we will test the upside of that resistance level. So I'd be engaging in a little more active old crop risk management if we trade to that 5 to 510 area on March corn.
Naomi Bloom of TotalGrainMarketing.com, your final word for the day?
Similar. Keep your rallies in check with expectations from the standpoint of, for the moment, we have 2 billion bushel carryout. So again, there's no reason for $6 corn. We would have to see a significant change in U.S. demand, and we'd have to have bad weather occur in Brazil in order to get the market really fired up. So if we can see any rally into the new year, keep it real. I think the targets mentioned are very realistic for cash sales. And then there are, you know, a few little market reports coming up with the crush report tomorrow, Friday the 15th. If you're into the dairy industry, we've got a big milk production report on Monday the 18th, and the cattle on feed hogs and pigs report out on Friday the 22nd. So there are a few little pieces of news that'll affect agricultural commodities even before Christmas.
And Mike Zuzulo at GlobalComResearch.com.
With D's 23 expiring today, Todd, and with what we talked about with Argentina, I think soy meal is an excellent leading indicator in the short term as the D's went off the board above 420, and the new lead month, January, is at around 404, 403 area. So that is one of the few markets that's still inverted, or as the funds call it, has a backwardization to it, and suggests that it's a stronger market than many of the others that we have in the commodity. So watch those numbers very closely, and also the Argentine cash prices for export. Other than that, I wish you and the other panelists and all the great listeners at Will a very blessed Christmas.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Naomi Bloom, Aaron Curtis, and Mike Zuzulo. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.